Parsha B'Shalach describes for us the Egyptians chasing after the Jews, and the Jews in that very difficult situation with the sea in front of them, the desert around them, and the Egyptians in the hot pursuit behind them. The Chumash tells us, Source 1, verse Yud, verse 10, Par approached the children of Israel, raised their eyes, and behold, Egypt was turning after them, and they were very frightened. And the children of Israel cried out to Hashem, and they said to Moshe, were there not enough graves in Egypt? You took us out to die in the wilderness, etc. Moshe said to the people, do not fear, stand fast, and see the salvation of Hashem that he will perform for you today. For as you have seen the Egyptian today, you will not see them ever again. Hashem shall do battle for you, and you shall remain silent. Hashem said to Moshe, why do you cry out to me? Speak to the children of Israel, and let them journey forth, and you lift up your staff, stretch out your arm over the sea, and split it, and children of Israel shall come to the midst of the sea on dry land. On this pasuk, Mati Tzakelai, why do you cry out to me? So here, Rashi brings down, source 2a, that God told them now when Israel is in distress, it's no time for lengthy prayer. So, don't cry out to me now. What you should be doing is, the Dabar of Bnei Israel, tell the people, be so, let them go forth. The question that almost majority, if not all of the Mefarshim ask, this is the question. The challenge in today's shiur is to distill down a number of ideas when there are so many. It's the question that the Ish Tamid articulates, Ubiyoter tamua shalo kogu lutam shal yusome Mitzrayim haitabes chutzakatam shal b'nei Yisrael. The whole point of the redemption from Egypt was the fact that the Jewish people screamed out. And we see the importance of tefillah. Umayta tana lav loed larich b'tefillah kasher kogu lam shal yusome Mitzrayim haitabes chutzakatam shal b'nei Yisrael. If the whole redemption from Egypt was in the merit of tefillah, the merit of prayer, why is Hashem telling Moshe, you know what, now's not the time to daven to me. Now's the time to move. Well, of course we want davening. How could Hashem ever say, enough tefillah? And again, the Ner Uzio, albeit he has a whole different approach, which we're not even going to mention today, he says it's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu also tells the people, remain silent. The situation, this stipulation that they be silent is difficult to understand, for the people were merely beseeching Hashem to save them from the hands of their enemies. Why was Moshe so intent on hushing them up? And further, we see Hashem doing the same thing to Moshe. Why do you pray to me? Speak to the children of Israel, let them start moving. Why did God word his commandment this way? The sages have told us Hashem yearns to hear the prayers of the righteous, which it implies that prayer is appropriate in every circumstance. And that's our question for today. What does it mean? We're going to focus more specifically on Kadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, less so on Moshe Rabbeinu's interaction with the people, which is a shiur in its own right. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu being told by Kadosh Baruch Hu, Mati Tzakelai, why are you crying out to me? Go forward. Isn't this an appropriate response when you're in trouble to cry out to God? How do we understand, as we call the shiur, the silencing the supplicant? So just to give a sense of some of the answers before, we're going to really focus in on three. One, the Sforno and 2b. After the leaders chastised him for taking them out of Egypt, Moshe cried out because he feared that they were lacking in faith and could not obey him when he ordered them to advance into the sea. To this Hashem replied, he was misjudging the people. All he had to do was to give the command, and Mishnat Shemin develops the Sforno in a very long essay that Jewish people are maminim b'nei maminim, they always believe, and that Moshe Rabbeinu should never feel for one moment that the Jewish people don't believe, and that is what Hashem was telling him. Don't worry, don't scream out, fear that the Jewish people aren't going to believe. They will move forward. Another approach, Nosdesha brings down in Source 5, quoting from the Sforim, that Moshe Rabbeinu was really davening for the Avivrav. He knew that Hashem was going to do a miracle for the Jewish people. That was no doubt about it. But what about the Avivrav? What about all those people that from the Egyptians that joined up with them? So Hashem answered, you don't need to daven for the Avivrav. I will also save them with everyone else as well. So those are two approaches in very brief in how to handle Moshe Rabbeinu's, the response Moshe Rabbeinu was given. Let's take a look at three approaches and see what we can learn from them for our lives. Approach number one, Chaim Moshe. And he says, V'nirah source 7, ki b'nei Yisrael kish'abdu layam yadu ve'minu v'kadosh baruch hu shi'atzil otam miyad ha-mitzri. U'miyad da'av shaparu. The Jewish people, when they're crying out to God, and Moshe Rabbeinu is crying out to Hashem, they know Hashem is going to save them. Because the kfaru gulum ma'az galutam Yisrael lo nisim niflos. They have seen all these miracles, shasak kadosh baruch hu mahem. They have been witness to miracle after miracle. And they knew that Hashem was going to do a miracle as well. What never occurred to them was that Hashem was going to do this absolute incredible miracle of splitting the sea. Because keep in mind, as we know, they didn't cross it. The exact language, they didn't cross the Red Sea. They made a U-turn. They went into the water just to come out on the same side a little bit further down. That they never imagined was going to happen. In their mind, when they were standing on the shore, they were imagining that when their tefillah said Hashem was going to vanquish the Egyptians, I don't know, by some way of warfare. You know, there's going to be, you know, rocks coming down from heaven or lightning and thunder. Something in that way that the Egyptians would come, would be seen, and they'd run from them. But they never imagined this scenario. And this is why the end of 8a, Ve'elu divrei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe matitzak elai, l'cholel nisim v'niflot acherim l'Yisrael. Why are you guys thinking about all of these different possibilities of how I'm going to get rid of the Egyptians? Halo lo yo'il lahem nesacher, the only miracle that will be worthy of them is the miracle of them drowning in the sea, and therefore go forward. So this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was being told, that you should be silent from your tefillahs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take you, and so HaKadosh Baruch Hu letzil tchem b'derech acher. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Jewish people. Be silent. Don't daven in this way. Hashem has his agenda, and he's going to do it the way he sees fit. And Hashem is saying the same thing to Moshe Rabbeinu. Move forward. This is the way that you are going to be saved. With this, explains the Chaim Moshe, perhaps we have one understanding of the Chazal that says, Kashez Zivugam Shaladam, the Zivug, the match of a person, who they marry, is as difficult as splitting of the Red Sea. So was the splitting of the sea difficult? No. What does this mean? It means that he says this, that so often when a person has a specific person in mind, they're davening, I want to marry this person. And we know that when it comes to a zivug, you should daven to Hashem, let me marry the best person for me. Don't daven for this specific person. So this is the same situation here as Kriyas Yamsa, where the Jewish people were davening, Hashem, this is the way you should get rid of them. And Hashem is saying, no, no, no. That's what you're making difficult, that you're so focused in on the one way. I'll get rid of them, but I'll get rid of them in the best way possible. Likewise, don't daven for me that this is the one I have to marry. Daven that you want to marry the best one for you. And you will receive what is best for you. And this is how the Chasam Sofer understands the pshat of the pasuk in the asterisk in 11. Fundamentally, however, Hashem was not disputing the need for prayer. Rather, it was the nature of their prayer that Hashem addressed. According to this interpretation, Matitzak Elai does not mean, why do you cry out to me? Which is the way we understand it, according to Rashi, as a question. But regarding what do you cry out to me as an exclamation? Hashem continued, don't pray that the Egyptians be vanquished. To do so would disclose a lack of faith, for I assured you that this would occur. Instead, pray for my guidance. Besieged by the wilderness on one side, the Egyptians from behind, and the sea straight ahead, the Jews are well entitled to pray. But instead of doubting Hashem's capacity to save them, they should have prayed for specific directions. Where to go, what to do. Hashem promised you'll be saved. So instead of davening Hashem, save me, you're already being promised. David instead, Hashem, help me. What should I do in order that I should be saved? Indeed, the phrase Matitzak Elai continuing in 12 may have been intended to offset partially Moshe's declaration of Bnei Yisrael should remain silent. Hashem responded, let them pray. Not about my capacity for saving them, but for the best way to achieve their salvation. This distinction can be applied to the contemporary scene with equal validity. To merely pray, says the Chasam Sofer, that Mashiach arrive indicates a lack of faith. After all, we've been guaranteed his arrival by numerous prophets and the Torah itself. Instead, we should pray appropriately that he arrives swiftly in our lifetime. And, continuing in the mindset of the Chasam Sofer, we should daven, what do we need to do in order to bring Mashiach coming closer? That he should arrive, that we know. That Hashem will save them, that we know. What is the directives in order to bring this about? That is what we need to understand. So, my friends, that's level number one. Not the way we first looked at it, which it seems to be so counter the way we understand things. When we look at the Pasuk, Matitzak Elai Hashem saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, why do you scream out to me? It's as if, oh, we don't want your tefillah. And how could this be? Hashem, of course, loves our tefillah. We were saved from Egypt because of our tefillah. Everything revolves around tefillah, about prayer. No, that's not pshat. Hashem, of course, wants our tefillah. But he wants the tefillah to be the appropriate tefillah. Not, please save me. Hashem promised he'll be safe. But what do I need to do? Where do I need to go? Give me the guidance on how I'm going to be safe. That type of tefillah is the appropriate tefillah. And this is what Hashem is teaching us, that sometimes it's not the davening itself, but that we have to work on making sure that we phrase our tefillah appropriately. Not give me this specific shidduch, but rather give me the best shidduch for me. And that's the first lesson that we learn from here. But clearly, according to this first approach, tefillah is always, always necessary. And Hashem is not in any way silencing Moshe Rabbeinu in or the people from davening. The second approach, and this is an approach that is quoted by a lot of the Sfarim. And that's why I said level 2 and 3, because level 3 is really an offshoot of this level as well. It's based on the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. And this, let's take a look in Source 13 inside. The R Scroll Stone Chumash quotes it. And this is mamish, the fundamental piece that we're going to work with in Mirtz Hashem today. The Or HaChaim deals with a fundamental problem. Isn't prayer the proper response when people are faced with danger? What are Israel and Moshe commanded not? Why are Israel and Moshe commanded not to pray at such a time? He explains that Hashem exercises an attribute of mercy only when the victims have at least a minimum degree of merit. Right, so which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be, you know, responding to prayer when one deserves it. At the sea, however, the attribute of justice argued that the Jews, no less than the Egyptians, had worshipped idols, right? Halalo of Devarazara, Halalo of Devarazara. And it was unjust for one nation to be saved while the other was to be destroyed. Consequently, prayer alone could not be effective. Therefore, there had to be a tangible merit. Therefore, Hashem commanded that the prayers be stopped and the people demonstrate their readiness to put their lives in danger of obedience to Hashem by plunging into the sea. The display of faith would earn them the miracle of the splitting of the sea. I'd like to develop this idea a little bit further. Notreif Eisenberger and Mesillas Bavava. The Kevan Shigavra Tanas Vekatrugim Alasanegorim Harehim Onim Iluya Bakasha Vinotzer Matzav Shal Surya Levcha Teshi. Yes, tefillah works. Tefillah works when we merit to it. And indeed, in 15, Ilmalei hayu ruyim mitzad maaseihem, hayam nikva lifnei amiyah. Had they been worthy, the sea would have split based on their tefillahs alone. That is clear. However, when we're dealing with they worshipped idols and they worshipped idols, when we're dealing with the Midas Adin, when we're dealing with the attribute of justice coming in, tefillah itself is not enough necessarily to change the situation. And that is why they needed to do something to show their emunah and bitachon in Hashem. And in showing their emunah in bitachon and Hashem, that was going to be the thing that would tip the scales. V'zot ha'itan of 16, Asher samo shel tzorei b'nei Yisrael, sheish lanu korach gadol yoter mikorach ha'tfila. We think that tefillah is the beginning and end of everything, and the answer is, yes, it is. However, there are times when tefillah just doesn't work, when we're not deserving, when we're asking for something and we deserve it and we dive into Hashem Kesun Tehei. But what happens when we're not deserving? What happens when our record is such that we don't need this and we want this, but we're not deserving of this? Does that mean we can't get it as well? The answer is, of course you can get it. And of course you need tefillah to begin the process. But tefillah can't be the entire process. You need to show the korach habitachon. You need to show the attribute of faith in Hashem. Shehi amoelet af b'shachin in alu shari tefillah. Even when the gates of prayer are closed, the gates of bitachon are always open. The mashal that he gives in 17, it's quoted again by a lot of the Sfarim, is of a fellow who comes into a country and for whatever reasons they catch him and they want to beat him up, and he says, "Whoa, I am from the house of the king, you can't beat me up." So they wait until the morning and they bring him to the king and they said, "Do you know this fellow?" He says, "He's from the house of the king." They said, "No, I don't know you." And so the guy says, "What? I am from the house of the king, which means I put my faith in you that you will protect me. And I know that anyone who says they are from the house of the king, you will give them pardon and protection." And the king says, "You're right, and you're pardoned." Likewise, kivyachol by Hashem, anyone who puts their faith in Hashem, gam kol kavecha lo yevoshu, they will not be, their faith will not falter, and Hashem will protect them. And this is what we need to understand. The Chavetz Chaim notes, v'da'o, the asterisk in 17, demidas avitachon einat tulia b'schuyos. Your faith, your trust is not dependent on merit. Shafilu ha'adam sheino hagun, even if a person isn't worthy, if they hold into their trust in Hashem, that Hashem will do kindness in them, that Hashem will protect them, that Hashem is the only address, then indeed they will be saved. As the pasuk says, Rabim achovim l'rasha, there are many of the pains of the rasha, but v'haboteach b'Hashem chesed yisavavenu, the one who trusts in Hashem, kindness will surround him. And that's what we need to understand. Even our Russia, who's boteach b'Hashem, who trusts in Hashem, he will be answered. Indeed, if we look for one moment, in source number 19, made a mistake, it's Rabbi Goldberger, in Six Steps of Bitachon. He says, one objection frequently raised is the following. How can I aspire to live my life according to the principle of bitachon when I know myself to be lacking in my observance of some or all of the mitzvot? How can I expect bitachon to work for me when I'm an acknowledged sinner? Jewish tradition answers this objection. In Shirei Das, Rabbi Yosef Leibloch-Zal asserts that bitachon applies equally to a wicked as to a righteous. He goes so far as to say that even a thief is commanded to have bitachon. As he burglarizes a home, the thief is required to declare to Hashem, "I trust in you that I will not be caught breaking in." If he is sincere in his trust, says Rabbi Loch, Hashem will save him from being caught, despite the fact that at the very moment he is transgressing Hashem's other commandment not to steal. Rabbosai, this is the power of bitachon. The power of bitachon is, I come from the palace of the king. I am related to the king. I know that I can take refuge in the king. I know that the king will spread forth his wings and protect me and give me the protection that I need, whether I'm deserving or not. And this, my friends, is our challenge. At the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, going back in source 18, says in Tziva Shalom, Shidamsu be'emunah b'chol libam. That is why Hashem is telling them, in order to be able to get over the kitrug, the accusatory force, you're going to need to create a tremendous rachamim, a tremendous amount of mercy. And how can you do that? By showing a tremendous amount of bitachon, faith in Hashem. And that is by going into the sea and believing that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to protect you. Koach habitachon, as he says in the Dad in 18, Hazeh omeid bechol hamatzavim. This is what we need to understand very practically in our lives. No matter what happens to us, when we understand that, you know, I daven to Hashem and I hope my tefillos are answered, when I see that they're not, and I realize that, you know, perhaps I'm not deserving that my tefillos will be answered, and there are many reasons why one's tefillos will not answer. Nevertheless, I need to try at least to do my ishtadlus, and part of that is to mamish put myself out there and say, Hashem, I have full trust and faith in you that you will provide for me what I need. And I'm ready to, in a very active way, pursue this idea of bitachon to show that I believe that you are the one protecting me. We'll talk more about this more specifically in a few minutes. And then, at that moment, to be able to daven. And this is what Nachshon does. He jumps into the water. He shows his bitachon to Hashem, source 20, back with Sils Bavavam, Hoshieni Elokim Kivo Mayim Anafa, shame me Hashem, the water has come to the point that I am about to drown. And this is his tefillah. He jumps in, he shows the bitachon, and while he's jumping in, showing the bitachon, what is he doing? He's davening. Don't think that davening is limited. Davening is our major weapon that we have. It's a major gift that we have. But sometimes tefillah needs to have with it accessories. And one of those accessories is this emunah and bitachon that Hashem will carry through. And it's interesting, just to finish up this essay in the Mesillas Bavavim, in terms of practically, he says, in 22, V'halimut mizeh domnam kein ein adam zocher l'shum yishuv ba'olam kima yidei tefillah. For sure, you need to daven. The first and foremost step is tefillah's davening. V'chol eidu v'chol matzav sarich rach l'tpallah v'lachzor v'lipallah. You have to keep on davening until Hashem is rachamim. Elo d'yesh v'shari shamayim skuri miglal ha'kidrut. But when? The Shari Shemaim, and we never know when that is, my friends, is closed because of accusatory forces. This is what you have to do to declare. I believe in you, Hashem, and I know I will not be turned down. And once you recognize that you're giving over yourself to Hashem, you once again daven. And now your tefillah should go b'li menia without anything blocking it. And this indeed, the Sefer Chasidim writes, that im shoel adam devar shu shevach l'boro, when you daven for something that is a praise to Hashem, or connected to the honor of Hashem, like learning Torah, or anything else that's spiritual, then even though you don't have ma'asim tovim, Hashem is going to respond. And Reb Chaim Palashi, right, very big Sfardi Mekubal adds to this, based on Rav Sadia Gaon, Ki kol tefillah sheyitzpalel adam lechvodo yisparach, any tefillah that you daven for the honor and glory of the king, that I need to have money in order to serve you better, and it's really an honest and heartfelt tefillah, so then again the accusatory forces can't step in the way, because it's really not about you, it's about the honor of the king. And if it is about the honor of the king, because you want to serve the king, so that all of these forces will fall away and you'll be responded to. And this is our job. End of 23. Ze avoda sachayim shel kol ish Yisrael. This is our mission. Lavod al midas habitachon. To work on really being able to put our faith in Hashem. And then you will see the response. Beram da'aka. However, know that the Yetzer Hara works very hard to bring in other factors that you forget God. And he says, for example, in the area of Parnassa, right? We know Kriyas Yam Suf is compared to Parnassa, to livelihood. A person may, you know, give the excuse of why his business not going so well, because these are fancy Hebrew words written in, English words written in Hebrew letters, because of the season, because of competition, because of recession. The chol shum de'eth lahon. And you make other, you know, thoughts like this. You know, the competition is really tough, that's why I'm not doing so well, and it's a time of recession. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide at all times. If you really believe that it's Hashem who's giving you the money, or Hashem is trying to wake you up and saying, you're not getting the money in order for you to be able to do here, Hurei Tshuva, to work on yourself, then you recognize that it's really in Hashem's hands, and you're not going to blame outside factors. When a person, as an example, Rav Matzisyahu Salomon brings this example, we've spoken about it many times. When a person has a very important business meeting, for example, and he spends up all night preparing for this meeting, and he misses his daf yomi shir, and he comes late to shul, and he flies through davening because he has to, you know, be ready for this business meeting. So then he's put all his faith in his efforts and not too much faith in Hashem. If a person really understands that Hashem is the one who's providing for him, so of course you need to do your ishtadlus, and every person, depending on where they're at, we'll talk about in a minute, needs to do that ishtadlus. But if you really believe that Hashem is the one in charge, so then you're going to go to your daf yomi shir, and you're going to go to davening, and not only you're not going to leave early, you're going to stay later, because this business meeting is so important to you. Where do you really put your effort? Where do you really put your, you know, is it just lip service? I believe in God, I'm showing up, God, you know, help me with that business meeting. And during the whole Shemoneh Esrei, you're going through the speech, you're going to the pitch you're going to give. Or do you really believe that Hashem is the one who's running the show? And that is why, in Source 26, the Ishtamig Rav Druk notes, this is why Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Mati Tzak Eli. Yes, you're davening, but you know, when you're davening, or particularly when the people are davening more so, the people's davening is tafsu umno savosam. They grab the artists, the craft works of their fathers, they're davening. But they're davening in safa v'lachutz, they're davening in a very, you know, routine type of way, not a real heartfelt way. And he says, L'chein amar kosh baruch l'moshe, shebematzav zel shechisaro b'emuna, lo te'il gam tefila, v'prat tefila kazo shena tefila mitit, lo te'il atel livko atayam. If I'm just going to listen to Klal Yisrael tefila at this time, I'm going to tell you stop davening. Because albeit they're davening, but they're not davening with full amuna. And if you're in a daven, kocha shel tefila lifol Yeshua, so what does it mean? Why is Hashem saying, stop davening? What he's saying is, if you're davening, if you're worthy and you daven, great. If you're not worthy and your davening has in it that sense of amuna, that you're davening and it's a heartfelt tefillah and you realize that Hashem is in charge, that's also good. But when you're davening and going through the lip service because I have to daven, but you're really not there, so that type of davening isn't going to split the sea. You're going to have to do some action that's going to prove amuna. Tefillah has the potential to be that medium of amuna and bitachon, if we utilize it correctly. Most of us are not on that level of utilizing amuna and bitachon correctly, and therefore they mamash have to go out and prove themselves with this level of amuna and bitachon and move forward. And that's why the Tiva Torah notes that Rashi points out here that the two things necessary to split the sea after Hashem said, you know, be silent. One is chusavos, the merit of their forefathers, and the second is amuna, babore, faith in Hashem. And here he quotes a gevaldic piece from Rabbi Akiva Eger, who says in the squiggly in 25, shelulei emuna, without emuna, ein bekoach adam lafur avor afilu etzaf delet beito. Without emuna, you can't even cross the threshold of your own house. You can't move without emuna. But with emuna, you have the ability even to split the sea. And this is what we need to understand. In each and every one of us, we go through a golus mitzrayim praticello. We go through our own challenges. When you suddenly see darkness all around you, and your yitzhahara is running after you, and you feel like, you know, you're stuck on all sides. When you're in this yam shel sorrows and you need to have a miracle happen, so he says, "B'matzav kaseh raki mitchazek b'emunato b'boreh, v'yedeh she'en derech acheret lefanav." When you realize that your only recourse is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it's not about me being more clever or this or that, but only the borei olam is going to save you, then the sea is going to split. And this is why, one of the reasons why Chazal have the Shira Sayam every single day. This is our job. Our job is through emuna, be'emes ubetomi, below chachmot klal. That you really believe that the Yeshua will come without all this fancy footwork, this, that. When you believe on this level, where the Rav speaks about it, your Ratzon Elyon, your higher self, knows that this is where Ratzon Hashem is, and you move forward, then indeed the sea will split. and you will be saved. You know, what comes to mind when reading this piece, perhaps similar, in my mind it was similar, is when 15 years ago we were deciding whether we should make Aliyah or not, without getting into all the complexities of the questions. It was something we were back and forth with for months. Baruch Hashem had a few job offers here that I turned down, and I was we were in a turmoil. Yes, come, don't come. Yes, come, don't come. We have so many shilas. Leaving Chutz La'aretz to go to Eretz Yisrael, it's not like leaving from one city to another city, back and forth. And I remember it was Parshas B'Shalach, preparing a Parsha Shir, and I had read a piece from one of Robertson Heller's Sforim that spoke about, you think that there's a sea in front of you, you think that there's obstacles in front of you. When you garner up that faith, that real sense of belief, you will see that you'll be able to cross the sea and the obstacles will disappear. And that one piece was like, whoa. If I had to say what was the turning point at that point in my life, it was that one piece. I read that piece and I said, you know, this is it. I think that this is too difficult and that's too difficult, but you know what? Where's my emunah? If I'm saying, let me just move forward, the sea will split, the obstacles will fall away. And after reading that piece that night, I called one of the jobs and I said, I'm ready to take it. Will you still have me? We called the school to try to get our daughter into that school. 2 weeks later, we sold our house and the rest is history. If you really believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is there to help you, then you will take those steps forward and the sea will split. But you have to take initiative. Bitachon isn't just stepping back and saying, I believe. Yes, but if you believe, you have to, on a concrete level, show your belief. And when you demonstrate that, then Hashem says, ah, I see you really do believe. Now let me meet you and split the sea. Someone had to jump into the water for the sea to split. And Rav Hirsch notes this in source number 27. To this comes the reply, Mati Tzakelai, Daberu B'nai Yisrael V'Yisoh. That is to say, the salvation is indeed still dependent on the people. The first step must be taken by them. They must first show themselves deserving of salvation by demonstrating their trust in God, a trust that leads to courage and to fearless alacrity in action. First, let them go forward and march into the sea without reservation or concern. Only then will Hashem pave the way for salvation. And the Os Deshem teaches the Elokai Mitzur at the end of our davening that same way. It's not that Hashem is going to, you know, vanquish all the people speak negatively about us and solve all our problems, and then we'll be able to have ourselves open to Torah. No! First, Elokai Mitzur L'Shonim Eira, we have to work on ourselves. V'nafshi Kafar L'Kol Tiyah. We have to work on our Lashon Hara. We have to work on our ability not to be offended by those who say things against us. Once we've done that, once we've taken the initiative, then Pesachli B'Besar Secha, then we can ask Hashem to open us up for Torah. This is similar in 29 to when Moshe Rabbeinu stops to see the bush that is burning. When Hashem sees this, he says, okay, now I'm ready to call to you. There has to be a first step on our part. And that is why Belsky points out there's a certain balance. If a person needs something desperately, then his tefillah is a very powerful force. He must also work towards building more merit for himself through acts of chesed, loving kindness, increasing his divine service to the avodas Hashem. On the other hand, there's a limit to how far one's efforts can be taken. A person cannot insist on getting what he wants, and the final analysis, he must submit to the will of Hashem, to the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who determines what and will not be. And that's what we have to appreciate, that with all of our davening, with all of our insistence, and all of our jumping into the sea, and moving forward, even if it's a difficult moving forward, at the final analysis, we have to have that bittul. That if Hashem does not want us to have this, then we have to step back and say, then it won't be, or won't be in this particular way. The Sefer, Six Steps of Bitachon, a very small Sefer, which is a fascinating read. I wish it would have developed the six steps a bit more. It's like a build-up of the six steps, stories about the six steps, but the six steps is like 3 pages. So that's my own frustration because of my own limited human understanding. He speaks about the basic idea is a person first has to determine that there's a need. that I need something from Hashem, that the need is a genuine need. And then he speaks about, once I determine it's a genuine need, I have to ask myself, how sure am I that Hashem is going to grant me this need? If I'm positive Hashem is going to grant me this need, then no ishtadlus is necessary. If I'm not positive, and I'm like, I don't know whether he will or not, then I have to put in my effort, and steps 4, 5, and 6 is how much effort you put in, how much are you ready to, and etc. But what I brought from here, which I thought was interesting, is there are certain things that we rely on Hashem without even thinking about, and those things we put in no effort. For example, I need air to breathe. So do I wake up in the morning and say, Hashem, I hope you're to give me air to breathe. I really need it, because otherwise I can't breathe. No. I assume that that's a basic need that Hashem is going to take care of for me, and I don't think twice about the fact that I'm breathing in every minute, or the fact that my hands are moving, or these things. That is a basic built-in bitachon that I believe that Hashem will provide this for me. When it comes to a little bit more sophisticated things, and the needs become a little bit more borderline, like how much money do I need, and how much nachas do I need, and how much refuah do I need, whatever the story is, I mean personally, but in life. So then we come into the shades of gray, and that's where the continuum of bitachon rises and falls, depends on a person who really holds by Hashem, and is able to step back and say, you know what, Hashem, you're in charge, and I'm going to do very little, or a person who's a little bit more nervous and say, I need to do a lot more, because I don't think I'm on that level that Hashem is going to come in. And again, that's where the bitachon comes and goes. This is our challenge. This is level number 2. That yes, tefillah is imperative. And even after the bitachon, we need to daven like Nachshon daven in the sea. Challenge we have to realize is that when tefillah is blocked, sometimes tefillah is blocked, A, because we don't have zchuyos, we don't have merit. Or sometimes tefillah is blocked, B, there are many other reasons, but the two we highlighted was tefillahs are blocked because we're not davening with enough concentration. We're mouthing the words, but we don't really feel that Hashem is in charge. Hi, Raya, if you would stop a person in the middle of davening and say, who are you talking to? They would look at you for a minute and say, oh, Hashem, of course, but it wouldn't be an obvious response because our minds wander to so many different areas. Going back to that example of the guy who's thinking about his business meeting in the middle of his davening. And this is what we need to understand, that when our tefillah isn't where it needs to be, and or our zchuyos, our merits, are not up to par, then we need to show definitive action. Whether it's a ma'aseh of chesed, an act of kindness, or an act to show that I have complete faith in Hashem, and that I am going to demonstrate this emunah, this faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that will enable me then to bring, knock out the kitrugim, knock out the negative forces, and to show, beyond a shadow of a doubt, my emunah. Perhaps just another example of this before moving to the third level, is if a person is having difficult time in parnasa, in livelihood, and he's davening to Hashem, Hashem, help me with my livelihood, and then they're faced with a challenge of something that's ethical or not so ethical, or, you know, a little bit on the books, under the books, through the books, and the parnasa and the livelihood is difficult. And that person says to Hashem, look, I know that you are the one who is basmiel l'chol chai ratzon, who gives every person exactly what they need. I will not fall into this trap of, you know, doing something that's immoral or that is illegal or unethical, because I know that Ein L'Hashem Matzor, you can provide for me whether I do this or I don't do this. So I am going to show my trust by I'm not going to do this, and in that way I'm putting my trust in you, Hashem. And by going ahead and doing that action, or not doing that action, by putting your faith in Hashem, once Hashem sees this, he says, ah, I see that you really have faith in me, and therefore I will grant you what, abundance of parnassah and a makeup from a totally different area. You know, the ma'aseh comes to my mind. I remember all the details, but if somebody, I believe it was from Moshe Feinstein, that's out, about doing a very, very big business deal during the 9 days or the 3 weeks, and Ramosha allowed it for Dover Avot, and he asked, can I shave? And he said, no, you can't shave, but you can do the business dealing. And the guy didn't listen, and he shaved anyway. And when they were about to close the deal, the other side said, well, how do we know we can trust you? And he said, I'm an Orthodox Jew. And they turned to him and said, if you're an Orthodox Jew, how come all Orthodox Jews we know have beards growing and you don't? So obviously you're not such an Orthodox Jew. We don't really trust you. And the deal was closed and broken. And this is such an example of, if you really have emunah that God's running the show, that you're going to listen to Gedolei Yisrael. You're going to listen to what is told to you, what you can do and you can't do. Do you really have emunah or not? Do you really, are you able to go into that sea? Are you able to enter into a difficult situation really believing that Hashem is in control? And that if Hashem wants me to have that business dealing, I'll have it with a scraggly beard. I asked the Shiloh, this is what I was told, and now I have to follow. And if you don't really have that emunah, so then it's no wonder that you're not going to get this deal. You're not going to get this parnosa. So this is very, very, albeit very philosophical and a little bit airy this week. And I apologize. It does have very, very practical ramifications in our lives. Put your money where your mouth is, literally. If you really believe, then you're going to be doing what's right and upright, even if it's going to cost you, whatever it's going to cost you. I believe that Kadosh Baruch Hu can take care of me, and I am not going to go over my integrity or what halacha is for a few extra dollars, because I know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can provide. When a person acts in that level of emunah, so Hashem responds with bracha. Then we come to another aspect of the emunah, and it's like a heightened aspect of the emunah. The Zohar HaKadosh, the Beis Avraham quote says, "Mati tzakelai ba'iska tzlalya milsa." It's all dependent on you moving. Shiatik atzvomim kamot. You move yourself from your place. And we know that a person very often into routine, and even if we want to change, we go right back to where we were before, in order to be able to have a Yeshua from Hashem, a salvation, you need to have what we call Shiatik v'yatzuz b'mkomo, and the asterisk in 32 b'mesiras nefesh, move beyond yourself. And this is that the Yitziat Mitzrayim was very much Mishrusa de la Ela, Hashem coming down from above. The Kriyas Yamsuf is very much an Mishrusa de la Tata, an awakening from below, where Kadosh Baruch Hu needed the people to actually do something that was not just emunah, it's really one step above that, and that is Mesiras Nefesh. And you see this as well in the Purim story, that yes, there was Divrei Tzomos V'Zakasa, of course, Klal Yisrael David, but it took an Esther Hamalka, and the asterisk in second asterisk in 32, who says, V'kasher avadati avadati, if I lose everything, I lose everything. She was being Mesir Nefesh by going to the king even when she wasn't called. That's what brought down the miracle. Likewise, by the Chashmonaim. All of these are examples where they went out and were literally Moser Nefesh in order to save Klal Yisrael. And that Mesiras Nefesh is what we need to keep in mind. And indeed, he quoted the idea in 33 that every Shabbos and Yantif, it's Zecher L'Tziyat Mitzrayim. What should we think about Zecher L'Tziyat Mitzrayim? One is the Emunah and Bitachon, which is in the world of Teva, in the natural scheme of things. And then there's an Emunah and Bitachon, which is L'mala Mina Teva. When you go, and you're Mosa Nefesh, when you act above and beyond where you're at, Hashem is going to respond above and beyond, and Mida Keneged Mida, Mamshich Neis Al TV, and do something above the natural order. And this is the second thing we need to appreciate. When tefillah doesn't work, mati tzakeh lai, tefillah is not going to be enough here. So one, emunah, showing that you have faith, you have to move forward. That's one answer. Sometimes even that's not enough. You have to mamish b'moser nefesh. You have to put yourself above and beyond. You have to act, you know, ma'al teva, above your desires, what's natural to you. And when you act in that way, like running into the sea, when the sea, if you're ba'al mayim anafesh, and you're ready to do that, it's up to your neck. When you're ready to give of your life and your soul for the will of God, then Hashem says, I'm going to act above and beyond and split the sea. Which leads us now, my friends, to, in my mind, one of the most beautiful pieces ever. On Kriyas Yamsuf, Shvi Shal Pesach, let's keep this in mind. Pesach is around the corner. He says, we don't know when Mashiach is going to come, but we do know that there's a lot of parallels between this time the Jews were in Egypt to the time we're in now. We do know, says Rav Pinkus and Tiferet Shimshon and Zvamarim, that we're in a very low level spiritually, and that the moment of Geula, the moment of redemption, is going to happen in any minute. And he says, the final Geula is going to be very much like the Geula, the redemption from Egypt. Kibo banim ad mashper v'koch ein l'ledet, that they'll come to the point of having to, you know, about to give birth, but there's no energy left to give birth. You don't even know where this is going to come from. And he says, in order to really appreciate how our final redemption is going to happen, we need to appreciate how the redemption in Egypt happened. And he describes that the Jews were, the Chazal described it as an ubar mimeimo, that we were like an infant taken out from its mother, that we were at that process of childbirth. But the moment we were really born was Kriyas Yamsuf. That was the moment of real birth. How do we understand what that means? So he explains that it's absolutely a fascinating essay. He says there's a parallel between Kriyas Yamsuf and Sukkot. And Sukkot, we have a ceremony at the end of 34 and 35 called Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And we know that Simchas Beis HaShoeva was a very happy time. Anyone who never saw Simchas Beis HaShoeva never saw happiness in their life. They would dance all night. Yonah HaNavi got his nevuah with Shavim Ruach HaKodesh. He drew it from this experience. And basically, the ceremony was drawing water at the Mincha time from the Mayan HaShiloach. You can go visit it today from the Shiloach spring. And they would bring it to the Beit HaMikdash, and they would pour it on the Mizbeach, and then celebrate. What was the great celebration of pouring water on the Mizbeach, you may ask? Well, it was poured into two holes in the Mizbeach. These two holes were called shiti. And indeed, Breishit Bara is understood as Bara Shit, that Hashem created these holes, these pipes, at the beginning of the world, and these pipes went down to the Tahom, to the very depths of the world. What does all this mean on any level? Like, I'm so excited that water's going down into the depths. That excites me. So he notes here in 36 and 37 that when Hashem originally created the world, it was water everywhere. Water represents chayim, it represents life, it represents chesed, it represents kindness. When Hashem created the world, it was surrounded by kindness from all sides. Then Hashem split the water, that there were higher waters and lower waters. The heavens are the blockage of all the higher waters, and the lower waters is the earth, right? Underneath it, it's us is all water. And what blocks us from tapping into the higher waters and the lower waters, which represent the chesed ein sofi, the unlimited amount of kindness of God, is heaven and earth. And hence, why do we get so excited, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, when it rains? Every drop of rain is like Hashem sending us kisses. It's coming from that higher level of Shamayim, coming down into this world, and we feel that things need to grow with rain. That this is Hashem's way of mamish, and the way I describe it is like Hershey kisses coming down from heaven every time it rains. And you see this in Eretz Yisrael, even little kids, when it rains, there's such an excitement. You feel Hashem's love. Rain is love. Come to Israel, you know what I'm talking about. But that's how we tap into the higher waters. When do I tap into the lower waters? So we tap into the lower waters on Sukkot. When we are able to send our gift to the lower waters, it's as if we are connecting to that Tahom, to the waters of the lower earth, and it's as if we feel Hashem's love for us. It's as if we feel that we are connecting to the Kesher Chesed Ha'ein Sofi Amluchat Va'amok Shel Kodesh Baruch Hu. That was a Simcha's Beis HaShoeva. It wasn't just a Simcha of some water being poured down in the Mizbeach. It was a Simcha of connecting to this everlasting source of love and kindness of Hashem. Of feeling this depth of unity, of love and closeness, which obviously, moving to the next page, happens right after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we feel that Hashem has forgiven us, and we have a relationship with Hashem. We feel that embraced by this ceremony of Sukkot. My friends, however, there's another time where we tap into these lower waters, these waters that represent Chesed and Hashem's love, and that time is Shvi Shel Pesach. While Sukkot is a time of tremendous love, Shvi Shel Pesach has a whole different Tam 40, Kishashem Yisparach Minashekum Mechaveko Tano Achareva Shon of Yom Kippur. After Hashem hugs and kisses us right before 40, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we see that Hashem opens up these lower waters, and this is that feeling of intensity and love. 40. Lumatzot, however, on the other hand, B'shini Shel Pesach, Mashavokeya Tetahom Zuatzara, what opens up the lower waters is not love, it's challenge, it's problems. Klal Yisrael got to this edge of the water, and they're in terrible distress, and they don't know what to do. At that moment, they jump in. Hashem says, this is not a time to daven to me. This is a time to access Mesiras Nefesh. This is a time to access your intense love for me, and I will respond. 42, Zeh Mashav Etzem Rabbi Kriyas Yamsuf. And this is what happened in Kriyas Yamsuf. B'Shvi Shel Pesach Niftach Lifneim Tahom Shalem Shel Chesed Eitzofi. You're wrong to think that just the water split and that's it. No. What split was the entire under universe. That wasn't English. The entire Tahom, the entire abyss split open. And we were surrounded by Chesed Eitzofi about this boundless, endless love. That was Shvi Shel Pesach. You're in a difficult situation. I'm going to open the depths of the underwaters for you. I'm going to allow you to access this feeling of love. Shamasikus Hashem. Of sweetness of Hashem. When we told Kappa, Lahem, Ge'ula, Cheiros Olam, and in that way, they were redeemed. And this, to be able to access such love, such chesed above and beyond, tefillah isn't enough. In order to do this, in order to be able to access that which is above and beyond this world, above the natural order of this world, you need to have Mesiras Nefesh. And that's why Hashem says to Moshe, generally tefillah is great, but here, you're in such a distressful situation, you need something above and beyond. You need tremendous love. You need to act above and beyond. And I'll respond above and beyond. V'lo hayam bilva nivka. It wasn't only the dot in 42 that the sea split open. Ella hatahom. The abyss split open. Ha-chesed ha-insofi shel Hashem, the boundless kindness of God, and His love came through. My friends, that obviously is a gewaltic insight on what Shvi Shel Pesach is about, and to think about, just to feel that tremendous love. And that was our birth. That was the final geula. What does this have to do with us? So says Rav Pinkus, if you want to know how we can bring ourselves to a final level of Geula, we too need to split seas. We too need to do something, have Mesiras Nefesh above and beyond, that Hashem should respond above and beyond, and once again bring this outpouring of love, this Chesed Ein Sofi, this boundless love. How do we do that? Just like they, at Kriyas Yamsuf, had to be Moser Nefesh, the tefillah wasn't enough. And obviously we need tefillah, but tefillah isn't enough. You need something with tefillah. So to here we need something, and that is Mesiras Nefesh. You know what nefesh is in Source 43 in the arrow. Ha-nefesh moreh bikar al-ritzon ha-adam. Nefesh is about the desire of a person. Suras ha-chayim, the way of a person's life. Ha-na'ot ha-tiviot shemeriyot ha-adam. What really interests you? And every generation has their Yetzihara. What we need to do is be Moser Nefesh against the desires of the current generation. And we have to, says Rav Pinkus, Lishmur ala pinot shelanu teharos l'Hashem l'sarasa. We have to be able to hold on to Tara, to purity, to be able to hold on to building Jewish homes that are not affected and inundated with all the tuma of this world. And just like there's so much yofi, there's so much beauty that's found in Yiddishkeit, in the ruchnias, in the kedusha, in the in Shabbos. Kol kach rabbe yofi v'ana tamun b'Yiddishkeit b'Torah b'mitzvos. Here is the challenge, my friends, and this is, I think this is This is where the challenge comes for all of us. We all want to Kriyas Yamsuf. In our own personal lives, we want to Kriyas Yamsuf on a worldly level. Sometimes we have to realize that as much as we daven, it's going to be limited. We have to act above and beyond. What can we do? Mesiris Nefesh. You know what Mesiris Nefesh is? It's Mesiris Ratzon. That our Ratzon, our desire, what our Nefesh, what our soul longs for, are Dvarim Shebekedusha, are things of holiness. That our homes reflect the Kedusha and Tara, holiness and purity. That what we bring into our homes is something, as Rav Pinkus mentions, you would feel comfortable if you felt like you're an Aron Kodesh in your home, you would feel comfortable reading, seeing, listening to this. This is the barometer we have to use. And we have to go beyond that and ask ourselves, where do we feel our geschmack in our Yiddishkeit? How many people walk around, and I hear this so often from my 18-year-old students, you know, Mrs. Smiles, we were always taught, walk the walk, act the act, but no one really cares what happens really in one's life, as long as it looks good. But this isn't where our simcha comes from. This isn't where our geshma comes from. You go through the motions. Rabosai, this is such a dangerous approach. We're raising kids in shells without any chiyus of kedusha in them. And it has to start with us as parents, us as neighbors and friends. It has to start with us. That we have to ask ourselves, look in the mirror, what brings us our simcha sechayim? What makes us on fire? What, you know, again, we've asked this so many times. If you could give you one birthday present or two birthday presents, what would it be? What do you dream that you could have? More ruchnius in your home? More spirituality? More geschmack? Or another outfit? Another piece of jewelry? Another night out at a restaurant? You know, there's nothing wrong with the pleasures of the world. But if this is what's going to fill me, then we have a problem. How do we split the sea in our day and age, my friends? It's Mesiris Nefesh, but it's Mesiris Nefesh in a very, very, very deep way, where I say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ki heim chayenu va'orech yameinu, you are my life, you are my focus. There's nothing that brings me a greater geschmack. Ah, you don't feel this yet? So this is where the avodah is. This is where your tefillah needs to be. Say Ava Rabba with tremendous amount of intent. Hashem, open my eyes, open my heart that I should feel this, that this should bring me the greatest love and energy in my life. And when I work on this, that this is the focus of my life, I'm then ready to say, I don't need to have X, Y, and Z to fill my time, to fill my space, to fill my emptiness, because I filled it with the most special and precious thing possible. And in that way, I am living a life of Kedusha, of holiness, and I've taken away those elements in my life that move me away from this aspect. It's very hard to live a life of Mesiris Nefesh and Kedusha and Tara in our day and age. But when we're Matzliach, and when we dive into Hashem to help us, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will no longer silence the supplicant, but rather split the sea for us, give us above and beyond, because we have gone above and beyond, we have stemmed the tide. And He will bless us with the blessings that we ask for. And ultimately, He will bless the world with the final redemption. What we need, my friends, is to jump into the water against the tide of society and say, we have not lost our focus on what is moral, what is correct, what is Kedusha, what is Tahara. And we're going to live our lives and our families, even in today's day and age, with these sets of values. And when we're Moser Nefesh, with our tefillah, Kadosh Baruch Hu will answer us, Latova.